Now that you're here, the word of the Lorax seems perfectly clear. Unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing is going to get better. It's not. So, catch!
Calls the Onceler. He lets something fall.
It's a truffula seed. It's the last one of all. You're in charge of the last of the truffula seeds. And truffula trees are what everyone needs. Plant a new truffula. Treat it with care. Give it clean water and feed it fresh air. Grow a forest. Protect it from axes that hack. Then the Lorax and all of his friends may come back.
Yertle the Turtle.
On the faraway island of Salamisand, Yertle the Turtle was king of the pond. A nice little pond. It was clean, it was neat. The water was warm, there was plenty to eat. The turtles had everything turtles might need, and they were all happy, quite happy indeed. They were, until Yertle, the king of them all, decided the kingdom he ruled was too small. "I'm ruler," said Yertle, "of all that I see, but I don't see enough. That's the trouble with me. With this stone for a throne, I look down on my pond, but I cannot look down on the places beyond. This throne that I sit on is too low down. It ought to be higher," he said with a frown. "If I could sit high, how much greater I'd be. What a king! I'd be ruler of all I could see." So Yertle the Turtle King lifted his hand, and Yertle the Turtle King gave a command. He ordered 9 turtles to swim to his stone, and using these turtles, he built a new throne. He made each turtle stand on another one's back, and he piled them all up in a 9-turtle stack. And then Yertle climbed up. He sat down on the pile. What a wonderful view. He could see most a mile. "Oh, mine!" Yertle cried. "Oh, the things I now rule! I'm king of a cow, and I'm king of a mule. I'm king of a house. And what's more beyond that, I'm king of a blueberry bush and a cat. I'm Yertle the Turtle. Oh, marvelous me, for I am the ruler of all that I see." And all through that morning, he sat there up high, saying over and over, "A great king am I," until long about noon. Then he heard a faint sigh. "What's that?" snapped the king. And he looked down the stack, and he saw at the bottom a turtle named Mac. Just a part of his throne, and this plain little turtle looked up and he said, "Beg your pardon, King Yertle. I've pains in my back and my shoulders and knees. How long must we stand here, Your Majesty, please?" "Silence!" the king of the turtles barked back. "I'm king, and you're only a turtle named Mac. You stay in your place while I sit here and rule. I'm king of a cow, and I'm king of a mule. I'm king of a house, and a bush, and a cat. But that isn't all. I'll do better than that. My throne shall be higher," his royal voice thundered. "So pile up more turtles. I want about 200. "Turtles! More turtles!" he bellowed and brayed. And the turtles way down in the pond were afraid. They trembled. They shook. But they came. They obeyed. From all over the pond, they came swimming by dozens, whole families of turtles, with uncles and cousins. And all of them stepped on the head of poor Mac. One after another, they climbed up the stack. Then Yertle the Turtle was perched up so high he could see 40 miles from his throne in the sky. "Hooray!" shouted Yertle. "I'm king of the trees! I'm king of the birds! And I'm king of the bees! I'm king of the butterflies! King of the air! Ah, me, what a throne! What a wonderful chair! I'm Yertle the Turtle! Oh, marvelous me! For I am the ruler of all that I see." Then again, from below, in the great heavy stack, came a groan from that plain little turtle named Mac.
"Your Majesty, please, I don't like to complain, but down here below we are feeling great pain. I know up on top you're seeing great sights, but down at the bottom, we too should have rights. We turtles can't stand it. Our shells will all crack. Besides, we need food. We are starving," groaned Mac.
"You hush up your mouth," howled the mighty King Yertle. "You've no right to talk to the world's highest turtle. I rule from the clouds, over land, over sea. There is nothing, no, nothing, that's higher than me." But while he was shouting, he saw with surprise that the moon of the evening was starting to rise up over his head in the darkening skies.
"What's that?" snorted Yertle. "Say, what is that thing that dares to be higher than Yertle the king? I shall not allow it. I'll go higher still. I'll build my throne higher. I can, and I will. I'll call some more turtles. I'll stack 'em to heaven. I need about 5,607.
But as Yertle the Turtle King lifted his hand and started to order and give the command, that plain little turtle below in the stack, that plain little turtle whose name was just Mac, decided he'd taken enough, and he had. And that plain little lad got a little bit mad, and that plain little Mac did a plain little thing. He burped. And his burp shook the throne of the king. And Yertle the Turtle, the king of the trees, the king of the air and the birds and the bees, the king of a house and a cow and a mule. Well, that was the end of the Turtle King's rule. For Yertle, the king of all Salamisond, fell off his high throne and fell plunk in the pond. And today the great Yertle, that marvelous he, is king of the mud. That is all he can see. And the turtles, of course, all the turtles are free. As turtles, and maybe all creatures, should be.
Gertrude McFuzz.
There once was a girl bird named Gertrude McFuzz, and she had the smallest plain tail ever was. One droopy droop feather, that's all that she had. And oh, that one feather made Gertrude so sad. For there was another young bird that she knew, a fancy young birdie named Lalalilu. And instead of one feather behind, she had two. Poor Gertrude, whenever she happened to spy Miss Lalalilu flying by in the sky, she got very jealous. She frowned and she pouted.
Then one day she got awfully mad and she shouted,
"This just isn't fair. I have one, she has two. I must have a tail just like Lalalulu."
So she flew to her uncle, a doctor named Dake, whose office was high in a tree by the lake. And she cried,
"Uncle Doctor, oh please, do you know of some kind of a pill that will make my tail grow?"
"Tut, tut," said the doctor, "such talk, how absurd. Your tail is just right for your kind of bird."
Then Gertrude had tantrums. She raised such a din that finally her uncle, the doctor, gave in. And he told her just where she could find such a pill, on a pillberry vine on the top of the hill.
"Oh, thank you," chirped Gertrude McFuzz,
and she flew right straight to the hill where the pillberry grew. Yes, there was the vine, and as soon as she saw it, she plucked off a berry. She started to gnaw it. It tasted just awful, almost made her sick. But she wanted that tail, so she swallowed it quick. And she felt something happen. She felt a small twitch, as if she'd been tapped down behind by a switch. And Gertrude looked round, and she cheered. It was true. Two feathers, exactly like Lalalulu. Then she got an idea.
"Now I know what I'll do. I'll grow a tail better than Lalalulu. These pills that grow feathers are working just fine."
So she nibbled another one off of the vine. She felt a new twitch. And then Gertrude yelled,
"Whee! Miss Lala has only just two. I have three. When Lalalulu sees this beautiful stuff, she'll fall right down flat on her face, sure enough. I'll show her who's pretty. I certainly will. Why, I'll make my tail even prettier still."
She snatched at those berries that grew on that vine. She gobbled down 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And she didn't stop eating, young Gertrude McFuzz, till she'd eaten 3 dozen. That's all that there was. Then the feathers popped out with a zang, with a zing. They blossomed like flowers that bloom in the spring, all fit for a queen. What a sight to behold! They sparkled like diamonds and gumdrops and gold, like silk, like spaghetti, like satin, like lace. They burst out like rockets all over the place. They waved in the air and they swished in the breeze. And some were as long as the branches of trees. And still they kept growing. They popped and they popped until long about sundown, when finally they stopped.
"And now," giggled Gertrude, "the next thing to do is to fly right straight home and show Lalalulu. And when Lala sees these, why, her face will get red, and she'll let out a scream, and she'll fall right down dead."
Then she spread out her wings to take off from the ground. But with all of those feathers, she weighed 90 pounds. She yanked, and she pulled, and she let out a squawk. But that bird couldn't fly, couldn't run, couldn't walk. And all through that night, she was stuck on that hill. And Gertrude McFuzz might be stuck up there still if her good Uncle Dake hadn't heard the girl yelp. He rushed to her rescue and brought along help. To lift Gertrude up almost broke all their beaks. And to fly her back home, it took almost 2 weeks. And then it took almost another week more to pull out those feathers. My, Gertrude was sore. And finally, when all of the pulling was done, Gertrude behind her again had just one. That one little feather she had as a starter. But now that's enough. Because now
She is smarter.
The Big Brag.
The rabbit felt mighty important that day, on top of the hill in the sun where he lay. He felt so important up there on that hill that he started in bragging, as animals will. And he boasted out loud as he threw out his chest, "Of all of the beasts in the world, I'm the best. On land and on sea, even up in the sky, no animal lives who is better than I."
"What's that?"
growled a voice that was terribly gruff.
"Now why do you say such ridiculous stuff?"
The rabbit looked down, and he saw a big bear.
"I'm best of the beasts," said the bear, "and so there."
"You're not," snapped the rabbit. "I'm better than you."
"Pooh," the bear snorted. "Again I say, pooh. You talk mighty big, Mr. Rabbit, that's true. But how can you prove it? Just what can you do?"
Thought the rabbit. "Now what can I do?" He thought and he thought. Then he finally said, "Mr. Bear, do you see these two ears on my head? My ears are so keen and so sharp and so fine, no ears in the world can hear further than mine."
"Humph," the bear grunted. He looked at each ear. "You say they're good," said the bear with a sneer. "But how do I know just how far they can hear?"
"I'll prove," said the rabbit. "My ears are the best. You sit there and watch me. I'll prove it by test." Then he stiffened his ears till they both stood up high and pointed straight up at the blue of the sky. He stretched his ears open as wide as he could. "Shh, I am listening," he said as he stood. He listened so hard that he started to sweat, and the fur on his ears and his forehead got wet. For 7 long minutes he stood. Then he stirred, and he said to the bear, "Do you know what I heard? Do you see that far mountain? It's 90 miles off. There's a fly on that mountain. I just heard him cough." "Now, the cough of a fly, sir, is quite hard to hear when he's 90 miles off, but I heard it quite clear." "So you see," bragged the rabbit, "it's perfectly true that my ears are the best, so I'm better than you." The bear, for a moment, just sulked as he sat, for he knew that his ears couldn't hear things like that.
"This rabbit," he thought, "made a fool out of me. Now I've got to prove that I'm better than he."
So he said to the rabbit,
"You hear pretty well. You can hear 90 miles, but how far can you smell? I'm the greatest of smellers," he bragged. "See my nose? This nose on my face is the finest that grows. My nose can smell anything, both far and near. With my nose, I can smell twice as far as you hear."
"You can't," snapped the rabbit.
"I can," growled the bear,
and he stuck his big nose way up high in the air. He wiggled that nose, and he sniffed and he snuffed. He waggled that nose, and he whiffed and he whuffed. For more than 10 minutes, he snaffed and he snuffed. Then he said to the rabbit,
"I've smelled far enough."
"All right," said the rabbit. "Come on now and tell exactly how far is the smell that you smell."
"Oh, I'm smelling a very far smell," said the bear, "away past that fly on that mountain out there. I'm smelling past many great mountains beyond, 600 miles more to the edge of a pond. way, way out there, by the pond you can't see, is a very small farm. On the farm is a tree. On the tree is a branch. On the branch is a nest. A very small nest where two tiny eggs rest. Two hummingbird eggs, only half an inch long, but my nose, said the bear, is so wonderfully strong. My nose is so good that I smelled without fail that the egg on the left is a little bit stale. And that is a thing that no rabbit can do. So you see, the bear boasted, I'm better than you. My smeller's so keen that it just can't be beat.
What's that? Called a voice from way down by his feet. The bear and the rabbit looked down at the sound, and they saw an old worm crawling out of the ground. Now, boys, said the worm, you've been bragging a lot. You both think you're great, but I think you're not. You're not half as good as a fellow like me. You hear and you smell, but how far can you see? Now, I'm here to prove to you big boasting guys that your nose and your ears aren't as good as my eyes. And the little old worm cocked his head to one side, and he opened his eyes, and he opened them wide, and they looked far away with a strange sort of stare, as if they were burning two holes in the air. The eyes of that worm almost popped from his head. He stared half an hour till his eyelids got red.
That's enough, growled the bear. Tell the rabbit and me, how far did you look, and just what did you see?
Well, boys, the worm answered, that look that I took was a look that looked farther than you'll ever look. I looked across the ocean, way out to Japan, for I can see farther than anyone can. There's no one on earth who has eyesight that's finer. I looked past Japan, then I looked across China. I looked across Egypt, then took a quick glance across the two countries of Holland and France. Then I looked across England and also Brazil. But I didn't stop there. I looked much farther still. And I kept right on looking and looking until I'd looked round the world and right back to this hill. And I saw on this hill, since my eyesight's so keen, the two biggest fools that I have ever been seen. And the fools that I saw were none other than you, who seem to have nothing else better to do than sit here and argue who's better than who.
Then the little old worm gave his head a small jerk, and he dived in his hole and went back to his work.
Figwick, the Big-Hearted Moose.
Up at Lake Winnebago, the far northern shore, lives a huge herd of moose, about 60 or more. And they all go around in a big happy bunch, looking for nice tender moose moss to munch. Up at Lake Winnebago one day they were lunching, just strolling along and enjoying their munching, for the moose moss that day was especially fine. When it happened that Thidwick, the last moose in line, saw a bingle bug sitting. The bug called out,
Hey, it's such a long road, and it's such a hot day. Would you mind if I rode on your horns for a way?
Of course not,
smiled Thidwick, the big-hearted moose.
I'm happy my antlers can be of some use. There's room there to spare, and I'm happy to share. Be my guest, and I hope that you're comfortable there.
So the bingle bug picked out a nice easy seat. and the moose went on looking for moose moss to eat. Well, an hour or so later, the bug heard a squeak, and he heard the small voice of a tree spider speak.
"I say," said the spider, "you've got a fine place. That moose seems quite friendly, has such a nice face. If I got on too, do you think you would mind?"
"Hop aboard,"
laughed the bug.
"And I think that you'll find that the moose won't object. He's the big-hearted kind."
"I accept,"
said the spider,
"with joy and delight."
And he started a web on the horn to the right. While the spider was spinning, he heard a gay song, and a fresh little zinazoo bird came along. He stopped and he stared, and he chirped.
"Well, well, well! What a smart place to build! What a great place to dwell! I've been living on trees ever since I was born. But here's something new. Why not live on a horn? If there's room there for two, then there's room there for three."
"There's plenty of room,"
laughed the bug.
"And it's free."
Thidwick stopped walking. What was all that talking? These guests had caught Thidwick the moose unawares.
"Hey,"
he called out.
"What goes on there upstairs?"
"Just building a nest, sir,"
the zinazoo said, and began yanking hairs out of poor Thidwick's head, and he plucked out exactly 204.
"Don't worry,"
he laughed.
"You can always grow more."
Then he dozed off to sleep in his fine moose hair nest.
"This bird,"
murmured Thidwick,
"is sort of a pest. But I'm a good sport, so I'll just let him rest. For a host, above all, must be nice to his guest. Besides, now it's getting quite late in the day, and surely tomorrow they'll all go away."
But alas, the next morning, the sun's early light brought to Thidwick's sad eyes a most unwelcome sight.
"Meet my wife,"
said the bird.
"I was married last night. And perhaps, by the way, I should mention to you that her uncle is coming to live with us, too. You're a very fine host, so I knew you'd be willing."
Then the uncle, a woodpecker, started in drilling. All Thidwick's friends shouted,
"Get rid of those pests!"
"I would, but I can't,"
sobbed poor Thidwick.
"They're guests."
"Guests indeed,"
his friends answered, and all of them frowned.
"If those are your guests,
we don't want you around.
You can't stay with us,
'cause you're just not our sort."
And they all turned their backs and walked off with a snort. Now the big friendless moose walked alone and forlorn, with four great big woodpecker holes in his horn.
"What holes?"
whispered Herman, a squirrel who spied him.
"What holes to hide nuts in? Mind if I tried them?"
"They're yours,"
called the woodpecker.
"Get right inside them. This big-hearted moose runs a public hotel. Bring your nuts, bring your wife, bring your children as well."
So the whole squirrel family all jumped on, pell-mell. And the very next thing the poor animal knew, a bobcat and turtle were living there too. Now what was the big-hearted moose going to do? Well, what would you do if it happened to you? You couldn't say scat, 'cause that wouldn't be right. You couldn't shout scram, 'cause that isn't polite. A host has to put up with all kinds of pests, for a host, above all, must be nice to his guests. So you'd try hard to smile, and you'd try to look sweet, and you'd go right on looking for moose moss to eat. But now it was winter, and that wasn't easy, for moose moss gets scarce when the weather gets freezy. The food was soon gone on the cold northern shore of Lake Winnebago. There just was no more. And all Thidwick's friends swam away in a bunch to the south of the lake, where there's moose moss to munch. He watched the herd leaving, and then Thidwick knew he'd starve if he stayed here. He'd have to go, too. He stepped in the water. Then, oh, what a fuss.
Stop!
Screamed his guests.
You can't do this to us. These horns are our home, and you've no right to take our home to the far distant side of the lake.
Be fair,
Thidwick begged with a lump in his throat.
We're fair,
said the bug.
We'll decide this by vote. All those in favor of going, say aye. All those in favor of staying, say nay.
Aye,
shouted Thidwick. But when he was done,
nay,
they all yelled. He lost 11-1.
We win,
screamed the guests.
By a very large score.
And poor, starving Thidwick climbed back on the shore. Then do you know what those pests did? They asked in some more. They asked in a fox who jumped in from the trees. They asked in some mice. And they asked in some fleas. They asked a big bear in. And then, if you please, came a swarm of 362 bees. Poor Thidwick sank down with a groan to his knees. And then came something that made his heart freeze. Bullets came zinging right past Thidwick's face. Guns were bang-binging all over the place.
Get that moose! Get that moose!
Thidwick heard a voice call.
Fire again and again, and shoot straight one and all. We must get his head for the Harvard Club War.
Thidwick took to his heels with that load on his head. With 500 pounds on his horns, the moose fled. He could have run faster without all those pests. But a host, above all, must be nice to his guests. Up canyon, off cliff, over wild rocky trail, with bullets bang-bouncing around him like hail, up gully, through gulch, and down slippery sluice, with his hard-hearted guests, raced the soft-hearted moose. Then finally they had him. Because of those pests, he had run out of luck. Because of those guests on his horns, he was stuck. He gasped. He felt faint. And the whole world grew fuzzy. Thidwick was finished completely. Or was he? Finished? Not Thidwick. Decidedly not. It's true, he was in a most terrible spot. But now he remembered a thing he'd forgot. A wonderful something that happens each year to the horns of all moose and the horns of all deer. Today was the day Thidwick happened to know that old horns come off so that new ones can grow. And he called to the pests on his horns as he threw them.
You wanted my horns? Now you're quite welcome to them. Keep them. They're yours. As for me, I shall take myself to the far distant side of the lake.
And he swam Winnebago and found his old bunch and arrived just in time for a wonderful lunch at the south of the lake, where there's moose moss to munch. His old horns today are where you knew they would be. His guests are still on them, all stuffed, as they should be.
Horton hatches the egg.
Sighed Maisie, a lazy bird hatching an egg.
I'm tired and I'm bored and I have kinks in my leg. From sitting, just sitting here day after day. It's work, how I hate it. I'd much rather play. I'd take a vacation, fly off for a rest. If I could find someone to stay on my nest. If I could find someone, I'd fly away free.
Then Horton the elephant passed by her tree.
Hello,
called the lazy bird, smiling her best.
You've nothing to do, and I do need a rest. Would you like to sit on the egg in my nest?
The elephant laughed.
Why, of all silly things, I haven't feathers, and I haven't wings. Me on your egg? Why, that doesn't make sense. Your egg is so small, ma'am, and I'm so immense.
Tut, tut, answered Maisie. I know you're not small, but I'm sure you can do it. No trouble at all. Just sit on it softly. You are gentle and kind. Come, be a good fella. I know you won't mind.
I can't, said the elephant.
Please, begged the bird. I won't be gone long, sir. I give you my word. I'll hurry right back. Why, I'll never be missed.
Very well, said the elephant. Since you insist, you want a vacation. Go fly off and take it. I'll sit on your egg, and I'll try not to break it. I'll stay and be faithful. I mean what I say.
Toodaloo,
sang out Maisie, and fluttered away.
The first thing to do, murmured Horton. Let's see. The first thing to do is to prop up this tree and make it much stronger. That has to be done before I get on it. I must weigh a ton.
Then carefully, tenderly, gently he crept up the trunk to the nest where the little egg slept. Then Horton the elephant smiled.
Now that's that.
And he sat, and he sat. And he sat, and he sat. And he sat all that day, and he kept the egg warm. And he sat all that night, through a terrible storm. It poured and it lightninged, it thundered, it rumbled.
This isn't much fun,
the poor elephant grumbled.
I wish you'd come back, 'cause I'm cold and I'm wet. I hope that Maisie bird doesn't forget.
But Maisie by this time was far beyond reach, enjoying the sunshine way off in Palm Beach, and having such fun, such a wonderful rest, decided she'd never go back to her nest. So Horton kept sitting there day after day, and soon it was autumn, the leaves blew away. And then came the winter, the snow and the sleet, and icicles hung from his trunk and his feet. But Horton kept sitting and said with a sneeze,
I'll stay on this egg and I won't let it freeze. I meant what I said and I said what I meant. An elephant's faithful 100%.
So poor Horton sat there the whole winter through. And then came the springtime, with troubles anew. His friends gathered round, and they shouted with glee.
Look! Horton the elephant's up in a tree!
They taunted, they teased him, they yelled.
How absurd! Old Horton the elephant thinks he's a bird!
They laughed and they laughed. Then they all ran away. And Horton was lonely. He wanted to play. But he sat on the egg and continued to say,
I meant what I said, and I said what I meant. An elephant's faithful 100%. No matter what happens, this egg must be tended.
But poor Horton's troubles were far, far from ended. For while Horton sat there, so faithful, so kind, three hunters came sneaking up, softly behind. He heard the men's footsteps. He turned with a start. Three rifles were aiming right straight at his heart. Did he run? He did not. Horton stayed on that nest. He held his head high, and he threw out his chest. And he looked at the hunters as much as to say,
"Shoot if you must, but I won't run away. I meant what I said, and I said what I meant. An elephant's faithful 100%.
But the men didn't shoot. Much to Horton's surprise, they dropped their three guns and they stared with wide eyes.
"Look," they all shouted, "can such a thing be? An elephant sitting on top of a tree. It's strange.
It's amazing.
It's wonderful."
"No.
Don't shoot him. We'll catch him. That's just what we'll do. Let's take him alive. Why, he's terribly funny. We'll sell him back home to a circus for money."
And the first thing he knew, they had built a big wagon with ropes on the front for the pullers to drag on. They dug up his tree and they put it inside, with Horton so sad that he practically cried.
"We're off,"
the men shouted, and off they all went, with Horton unhappy 100%. Up out of the jungle, up into the sky, up over the mountains 10,000 feet high. Then down, down the mountains and down to the sea went the cart with the elephant, egg nest, and tree. Then out of the wagon and onto a ship, out over the ocean, and oh, what a trip. Rolling and tossing and splashed with the spray. And Horton said day after day after day,
"I meant what I said, and I said what I meant. But oh, am I seasick. 100%.
After bobbing around for 2 weeks like a cork, they landed at last in the town of New York.
"All ashore!"
the men shouted. And down with a lurch went Horton the elephant, still on his perch. Tied onto a board that could just scarcely hold him. Boom! Horton landed. And then the men sold him. Sold to a circus. Then week after week, they showed him to people at 10 cents a piece. They took him to Boston, to Kalamazoo, Chicago, Weehawken, and Washington, too. To Dayton, Ohio, St. Paul, Minnesota, to Wichita, Kansas, to Drake, North Dakota. And everywhere, thousands of folks flocked to see and laugh at the elephant up in a tree. Poor Horton grew sadder the farther he went, but he said as he sat in the hot, noisy tent,
"I meant what I said, and I said what I meant. An elephant's faithful, 100%.
Then one day, the circus show happened to reach a town way down south, not so far from Palm Beach. And dawdling along way up high in the sky, who, of all people, should chance to fly by? But that old good-for-nothing bird runaway Maisie, still on vacation and still just as lazy. And spying the flags in the tents just below, she sang out, "What fun! Why, I'll go to the show!" And she swooped from the clouds through an open tent door.
"Good gracious," gasped Maisie. "I've seen you before."
Poor Horton looked up with his face white as chalk. He started to speak, but before he could talk, there rang out the noisiest, ear-splitting squeaks from the egg that he'd sat on for 51 weeks. A thumping, a bumping, a wild, alive scratching.
"My egg!" shouted Horton. "My egg! Why, it's hatching!"
"But it's mine!"
screamed the bird when she heard the egg crack. The work was all done. Now she wanted it back.
"It's my egg!"
she sputtered.
"You stole it from me! Get off of my nest and get out of my tree!"
Poor Horton backed down with a sad, heavy heart. But at that very instant, the egg burst apart. And out of the pieces of red and white shell, from the egg that he'd sat on so long and so well, Horton the elephant saw something whiz. It had ears and a tail and a trunk just like his. And the people came shouting, "What's all this about?" They looked and they stared with their eyes popping out. And they cheered and they cheered and they cheered more and more. They'd never seen anything like it before. "My goodness, my gracious," they shouted. "My word, it's something brand new. It's an elephant bird." And it should be. It should be. It should be like that. Because Horton was faithful. He sat and he sat. He meant what he said. And he said what he meant. And they sent him home happy. 100%.
The Cat in the Hat comes back.
This was no time for play. This was no time for fun. This was no time for games. There was work to be done. All that deep, deep, deep snow, all that snow had to go. When our mother went down to the town for the day, she said, "Somebody has to clean all this away. Somebody, somebody has to, you see." Then she picked out two somebodies, Sally and me. Well, there we were working like that, and then who should come up but the Cat in the Hat? "Uh-oh," Sally said. "Don't you talk to that cat. That cat is a bad one, that Cat in the Hat. He plays lots of bad tricks. Don't you let him come near. You know what he did the last time he was here." "Play tricks?" laughed the cat. "Oh, my, my. No, no, no. I just want to go in to get out of the snow." "Keep your mind on your work. You just stay there, you two. I will go in the house and find something to do." Then the cat went right in. He was up to no good, so I ran in after as fast as I could. Do you know where I found him? You know where he was? He was eating a cake in the tub. Yes, he was. The hot water was on and the cold water, too. And I said to the cat, "What a bad thing to do." "But I like to eat cake in a tub," laughed the cat. "You should try it sometime," laughed the cat as he sat. And then I got mad. This was no time for fun. I said, "Cat, you get out. There is work to be done. I have no time for tricks. I must go back and dig. I can't have you in here eating cake like a pig. You get out of this house. We don't want you about." Then I shut off the water and let it run out. The water ran out, and then I saw the ring. A ring in the tub. And oh boy, what a thing. A big, long, pink cat ring. It looked like pink ink. And I said, "Will this ever come off? I don't think." "Have no fear of that ring," laughed the Cat in the Hat. "Why, I can take cat rings off tubs just like that." Do you know how he did it? With Mother's white dress. Now the tub was all clean, but her dress was a mess. Then Sally looked in. Sally saw the dress too, and Sally and I did not know what to do. We should work in the snow, but that dress, what a spot. "It may never come off," Sally said. "It may not." But the cat laughed. "Ho, ho, I can make the spot go. The way I take spots off a dress is just so. See here," laughed the cat. "It is not hard at all. The thing that takes spots off a dress is a wall." Then we saw the cat wipe the spot off the dress. Now the dress was all clean, but the wall, what a mess. "Oh, wall spots," he laughed. "Let me tell you some news. To take spots off a wall, all I need is two shoes." Whose shoes did he use? I looked and saw whose, and I said to the cat, "This is very bad news. Now the spot is all over Dad's $10 shoes." "But your dad will not know about that," said the cat. "He will never find out," laughed the Cat in the Hat. "His $10 shoes will have no spots at all. I will rub them right off on this rug in the hall." "But now we have rug spots," I yelled. "What a day! Rug spots! What next? Can you take them away?" "Don't ask me," he laughed. "Why, you know that I can." Then he picked up the rug and away the cat ran. "I can clean up these rug spots before you count three. No spots are too hard for a hat cat like me." He ran into Dad's bedroom, and then the cat said, "It is good that your dad has the right kind of bed." Then he shook the rug. crack! Now the bed had the spot, and all I could say was, "Now what, cat? Now what?" But the cat just stood still. He just looked at the bed. "This is not the right kind of a bed," the cat said. "To take spots off this bed will be hard," said the cat. "I can't do it alone," said the Cat in the Hat. "It is good I have someone to help me," he said. "Right here in my hat on the top of my head, it is good that I have him here with me today. He helps me a lot. This is Little Cat A." And then Little Cat A took the hat off his head. "It is good I have someone to help me," he said. "This is Little Cat B, and I keep him about, and when I need help, then I let him come out." And then B said, "I think we need Little Cat C. That spot is too much for the A cat and me, but now have no fear, we will clean it away, the three of us, Little Cats B, C, and A." "Come on, take it away," yelled Little Cat A. "I will hit that old spot with this broom. Do you see? It comes off the old bed. It goes on the TV." And then Little Cat B cleaned up the TV. He cleaned it with milk, put the spot in a pan, and then C blew it out of the house with a fan. "But look where it went," I said. "Look where it blew. You blew the mess out of the house, that is true, but now you made snow spots. You can't let them stay." "Let us think about that now," said C, B, and A. "With some help, we can do it," said Little Cat C. Then pop, on his head we saw Little Cat D. Then pop, 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 Little Cats E, F, and G. "We will clean up that snow if it takes us all day. If it takes us all night, we will clean it away," said Little Cats G, F, E, D, C, B, A. They ran out of the house then, and we ran out too. And the big cat laughed. "Now you will see something new. My cats are all clever. My cats are good shots. My cats have good guns. They will kill all those spots." But this did not look very clever to me. Kill snow spots with pop guns? That just could not be. "All this does is make more spots," we yelled at the cat. "Your cats are no good. Put them back in your hat. Take your little cats G, F, E, D, C, B, A. Put them back in your hat and you take them away." "Oh, no," said the cat. "All they need is more help. Help is all that they need. So keep still and don't yelp." Then Little Cat G took the hat off his head. "I have Little Cat H here to help us," he said. "Little Cats H, I, J, K, L, and M. But our work is so hard, we must have more than them. We need Little Cat N. We need O. We need P. We need Little Cats Q, R, S, T, U, and V." "Come on, kill those spots. Kill the mess," yelled the cats. And they jumped at the snow with long rakes and red bats. They put it in pails and they made high pink hills, pink snowmen, pink snowballs, and little pink pills. Oh, the things that they did, and they did them so hard it was all one big spot now all over the yard. But the big cat stood there and he said, "This is good, this is what they should do, and I knew that they would. With a little more help, all the work will be done. They need one more cat. And I know just the one. Look close in my hand. I have Little Cat V. On his head are cats W, X, Y, and Z. Z is too small to see, so don't try. You cannot. But Z is the cat who will clean up that spot. Now here is the Z you can't see," said the cat. "And I bet you can't guess what he has in his hat. He has something called Voom. Voom is so hard to get, you never saw anything like it, I bet. Why, Voom cleans up anything, clean as can be." Then he yelled, "Take your hat off now, Little Cat Z. Take the Voom off your head, make it clean up the snow. Hurry, you little cat, 1, 2, 3, go!" Then the Voom, it went Voom, and oh boy, what a Voom! Now don't ask me what Voom is, I never will know, but boy, let me tell you, it does clean up snow. "So you see," laughed the cat, "now your snow is all white, now your work is all done, now your house is all right, and you know where my little cats are," said the cat. "That Voom blew my little cats back in my hat. And so, if you ever have spots, now and then, I will be very happy to come here again." with little cats A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, and O, P, and Q, I, S, T, and cat U, and cat V, and little cats W, X, Y, and Z.
We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged collection of The Cat in the Hat and other Dr. Seuss favorites by Dr. Seuss. This program was produced and directed by John McElroy. Executive producer Dan Zitt. Music for The Cat in the Hat and The Cat in the Hat Comes Back by Mark Levinson. The Cat in the Hat, trademark and copyright 1957 by Dr. Seuss Enterprises, L.P. Production copyright 2003 Random House, Inc. All rights reserved. Horton Hears a Who. Trademark and copyright 1954 by Dr. Seuss Enterprises, L.P. Production copyright 1990 Random House, Inc. All rights reserved. How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Trademark and copyright 1957 by Dr. Seuss Enterprises, L.P. Production copyright 1992 Random House, Inc. All rights reserved. Did I ever tell you how lucky you are? Trademark and copyright 1973 by Dr. Seuss Enterprises, L.P. Production copyright 1993 Random House, Inc. All rights reserved. The Lorax. Trademark and copyright 1971 by Dr. Seuss Enterprises, L.P. Production copyright 1992 Random House, Inc. All rights reserved. Yertle the Turtle and Other Stories. Trademark and copyright 1950 by Dr. Seuss Enterprises, L.P. Production copyright 1992 Random House, Inc. All rights reserved. Fidwick, the Big-Hearted Moose. Trademark and copyright 1948 by Dr. Seuss Enterprises, L.P. Production copyright 1993 Random House, Inc. All rights reserved. Horton Hatches the Egg. Trademark and copyright 1940 by Dr. Seuss Enterprises, L.P. Production copyright 1991 Random House, Inc. All rights reserved. The Cat in the Hat Comes Back. Trademark and copyright 1958 by Dr. Seuss Enterprises, L.P. Production copyright 2003 Random House, Inc. All rights reserved. Please listen for an excerpt of Imagination Studios' other collection, Green Eggs and Ham and Other Servings of Dr. Seuss. Available now.
I am Sam.
I am Sam.
Sam, I am.
That's Sam I am. That's Sam I am. I do not like that Sam I am.
Do you like green eggs and ham?
I do not like them, Sam I am. I do not like green eggs and ham.
Would you like them here or there?
I would not like them here or there. I would not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam I am.
Would you like them in a house? Would you like them with a mouse?
I do not like them in a house. I do not like them with a mouse. I do not like them here or there. I do not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam I am.
Would you eat them in a box? Would you eat them with a fox?
Not in a box, not with a fox, not in a house, not with a mouse. I would not eat them here or there. I would not eat them anywhere. I would not eat green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam I am.
Would you, could you, in a car? Eat them, here they are.
I would not, could not, in a car.
You may like them. You will see. You may like them in a tree.
I would not, could not in a tree. Not in a car. You let me be. I do not like them in a box. I do not like them with a fox. I do not like them in a house. I do not like them with a mouse. I do not like them here or there. I do not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam I am.
Hello, this is Jim Dale, narrator of the Harry Potter audiobook series. Listening to audiobooks isn't just great entertainment, it's also a great way for your family to experience and enjoy books together. Studies have shown that listening to stories read aloud helps children build vocabulary, improve their reading skills, and succeed more readily in school. It's an important step on the road to becoming